the NFL Podcast. Creators of the GM Reddit board app.
Damn right. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast presented by SiriusXM. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
We're all together, and it feels damn good, but not everything feels good. The Shield dynasty is over. Long live the Shield. The company co-ed softball team went down in the finals to Barney's Nooners 13-10. Dug ourselves a hole, deep hole, fell behind 8-0, and crawled our way back, scored 10 runs in the last, what was it, two innings, Wes?
Two innings, I think.
Rally came up painfully short. Our great player on deck as the tying run when one of our top girls got caught off first base, got in a rundown, tagged out. It's like Babe Ruth when he got thrown out trying to steal second in the World Series. All those years ago.
Wait, like rounding first or
yes.
Something?
Trying to go to second. Trying to make something happen.
And because our listeners have been interested in the Shield for three seasons now, this feels like the right time for a press conference. Any thoughts about the season? And we have a lot to get to today on the Around the Podcast, but the most important thing is what happened with the Shield on Wednesday. So we'll take some questions. Quick press conference.
All right, right here.
All right, there.
Can we start with your decision at pitcher, Skip? A smattering of vlogs and talk radio outlets are pinging you for starting Brooke from original content on the mound over a surging Matt Tanton. Would you do it again?
I'd do it again, yes. I really thought Brooke, although she'd missed the bulk of the season, she'd carried us in a lot of ways to our first two titles on the bump, and it was not an easy decision, and I worked with my consigliere, Wes, trying to come up with the right move, and maybe it was the right move. Maybe if Maddie's on the mound, same outcome, we lose. But I felt good going with what I thought was our best team. Wes, do you have anything to add to that?
We had reached a decision that we would have been fine with either of those people pitching, that pitching was not our issue. We have other issues, but pitching was not it. Either one of those persons would have done the job just fine.
Next
question. You got to score more than 10 runs to win in softball.
Yeah, I was going to.
Right there, black shirt.
I had a big softball for you, but that answer begs the question, well, what are the issues?
Our leadoff hitter started the game 0-for-3, including striking out to start the game.
Now, Wes, you're a warrior, and I want people to know that, Chris, that just shows you what time a man he is, that he's going to say that. Yes, slow start. You finished strong. You played a big part in the seventh-inning rally, played very good defense. You were not the reason we lost, but we didn't play our cleanest game. We did not play a great defensive game. We didn't pitch our best game, but it wasn't just that. We left runs on the field. We let runs score that shouldn't have scored. We just didn't play our A game. We were the best team in the league. We just weren't the best team on Wednesday night, and that's sports. Anything else?
It was execution. We just failed to execute.
Got to ask this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can. I spoke with a source downstairs who told me there was an aura of this sort of might be our last go-around after the loss. You, Skip, have toyed with retirement for years verbally. I don't know if that's sort of a cat-and-string operation with the press. Where are you? Are you coming back next season?
I'm not ready to answer that right now. It's a very emotional time. It was one of the toughest losses of my career. Absolutely. I think we were all very confident. There were some people I know in the media thought, Wes, that we were overconfident, which I don't think was
that
the case.
That was not the issue at all. Overconfidence was not an issue.
How about execution?
Execution.
You were more – because usually you always talk down your expectations. And then the last week, you guys, you were talking them up.
That just wasn't an issue. I don't think it was.
One more for Coach.
Quick follow-up if we could. I mean, any thoughts to coming back? How about you do come back next year, but with a new wave of NFL media employees on the team. Let's say William McGinnis, LaDainian Tomlinson, and maybe Deion Sanders to systematically drop an A-bomb on these ham and eggers that populate the rest of the league.
I'm going to cut you off right there. That's a clown question, bro. It's a clown question. I love my team. I support my team. This is a great team that has heart for days, and we didn't get it done, but this is not a teardown. This is not the end of the Shield, maybe the end of Skip, and I don't know about third base. Wes, I know you said some things after the game, Wes, about a potential retirement. Any thoughts that you have on that?
Well, my skills have eroded, and I'm physically weaker. I'm just not as good as I was a few years ago, and it doesn't feel good to be one of the reasons we lost. That's a new feeling for me in softball. So it's sort of a wake-up call, and it gives me a greater appreciation for, say, Brett Favre or Ben Roethlisberger or Gronk, where you say after the season, I'm probably hanging them up. And then maybe you get a few months to think about it. But I feel like I'm going to leave my spikes on the back of the dugout and call it a career.
Maybe you guys are the 2017 Patriots, though. You started the press release saying the dynasty's over. But who knows? Maybe it's just you just win it next year, and it's just one little championship loss that's part of the greater story.
The Shield is at a crossroads. I think that is a good way to put it. All right, coming up on today's show, end presser. This is a good thing. Rosenthal remembers a return to the Raven's Nest.
What is that? I didn't plan this segment. What is this?
Coming up later today. Greg flew across the country on the NFL's dime. Thanks, Rog. And watched camp. And I don't know about you guys. I haven't talked to you.
Cost a lot of money, by the way.
It cost a lot of money. I haven't talked to you at all about your trip. So I'm
really
excited to hear about it.
I got upgraded to first class on the way back.
What?
Very expensive trip.
That was a nice drop, and I'm happy with the title you came up with, but it just makes me really miss Greggy Does Dallas.
A lot of people speculated. We had mentioned during our tour of conference rooms across NFL media here when this studio was being refurbished, whether the Debbie Does Dallas or Greggy Does Dallas segment was what got us almost fired. No.
No.
Not at all.
A semi-stern talking to about that, but we were never threatened our job. So anyway, Greg was in Baltimore. His boys, the Ravens, got to see his boy Lamar. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about your Making the Leap piece on Lamar Jackson. A lot to get to over there as we jump back into the Ravens' nest. But before that, what we're hearing presented by SiriusXM. Let's do some news, Ricky.
We're in Tampa Bay for Inside Training Camp. You heard that saying? When in Rome, do as the Romans do. How about in Tampa? In Tampa, when you're in Tampa, you do as the Bucks do. I got my BA hat. You're jealous. You got to have one of these things. Everybody's got to have one of these things. BA has one. I have one. Now we got a great show for you. We're live at practice.
He talks for 3 hours straight here, by the way.
No, not that rapper. I'm talking about Ian Rappaport with all the breaking news around the league. Nobody does it better than him. And then our host, Andrew Siciliano. He's been all over the world. He goes everywhere. Just follow him on social media. I'm plugging you, Andrew. Remember that, okay? But he's here in Tampa, and you're lucky to have him. Live, NFL Network, Inside Training Camp. I'll see you later.
We need him to hype us. We need this kind of treatment from Charlie Casserly.
Charlie Casserly, a real person. GM, he's got rings. He's got a great life. But sometimes it amazes me when I watch him in action and the things that he says. We should get him on the show. Chaz.
This clip, by the way,
if you
look at his Twitter feed, this clip took place the entire time he unfurled that speech.
Oh, right.
Wearing a red, Bruce Arians cap. That's what he was referring to. But through the jaws of a gigantic dinosaur mouth.
No,
or something?
It was the
Tampa Bay fish
pirate ship skull and bones.
I mean, it was
a thing.
Check it out.
It was a whole thing. All right, let's get into the news, starting right here in Los Angeles. The Rams did some business, signing coach Sean McVay to a 5-year extension and also extending general manager Les Snead. McVay is 33 years old, now under contract through 2023. It wasn't a situation where they had to get a deal done right now, but they know what they have in McVay. Greg, who in 2017 when he got hired was, I wouldn't call him an unknown, but he was obviously untested, and it was a bit of a leap of faith, and it turned out to go gangbusters, to use a Sheckism.
I mean, he's 24-8. The thing of the disappointment coming off the Super Bowl loss is overlooking how fast and quickly they established themselves as really the most consistent team right now in the NFC. And the reason why, not that they need, any kudos for signing McVay, it's obviously safe, but he seems so good at all the other things. He gets so much credit for scheming, but he seems so good at all the other things that a head coach is required to do, which is managing his staff, managing the players, organization, managing the day-to-day things that come with being a coach.
I think it did need to happen now because Mike Silver reported that McVay was believed to be the lowest paid coach in the league after the Super Bowl and was getting less money than Matt LaFleur and Zach Taylor. So
there was a raise.
Basically, sure. they came to him right after that game and said, "We're going to get something done," and smart. It makes complete sense.
Very smart. And they say, Wes, in baseball, they say it's vital to be very strong up the middle, catcher, pitcher, right. shortstop, center field. Same thing in football with you have to be strong, ownership, the general manager, the coach, the quarterback. Hmm. And that's why the Rams are where they are for the past 3 years.
They went from being a laughingstock organization to sort of the new paradigm for success in the NFL. In the dozen years before McVay, they won 31.5% of their games. Since they hired him, they've won 75% of their games. It doesn't get much better than that.
It's neat, a nice decision, I guess, by ownership, who was not a popular ownership group and one of the least successful ownership groups in the NFL until McVay came along. A good decision to keep Les Snead and pair him with McVay, because I think it's clearly 1A, 1B that Les Snead is fulfilling McVay's vision, but they really work well together.
Snead was on the ropes, too, before. McVay right. was kind of like his Hail Mary in a way, and it could not have worked out.
He'd be like a cat on his fourth life right now.
Right. 8.5, maybe?
he wasn't that far.
They didn't really do anything those first several years.
He's died 8 times. I don't know if he's
well,
died.
Well, it's 9 lives,
times.
Right? The cats.
Yeah, but he's yeah. died.
He also took
he
over. He also took over what was literally the worst 3-year run in NFL history before Jeff Fisher got there. So it was like, he was doing okay before him.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
I like Les. I'm sticking with
4 lives.
They were worse than the Browns.
He's at about life 4.5, 5 lives.
Would you mind splitting the difference? Go 6?
No, it's too many. I mean, and I don't even believe that that's true of cats to begin with. I think that was a bunch of malarkey.
Well, you had like 9 cats in your backyard at one point.
They're all gone.
They only got 1 life.
Figure that out.
Did you multiply them by 9?
No, but I don't know. They were taken out of my household, thankfully.
Interesting.
But
all right, so the Rams do business. You know who wants to do business? Michael Thomas, the star Saints wide receiver. He wants a new deal. He wants to get paid like what he is, which is a superstar. He's in the superstar club, which means a lot to him. But he's a 2016 second-round pick, which means he doesn't make a lot of money. He makes $1.1 million as he enters the he's set to make $1.148 million as he enters the final year of his rookie contract. He wants to get paid like a star, and that's why he's holding out. Mike Garofalo and Ian Rappaport reported that Thomas did not report to training camp with teammates. He's seeking a new deal, and Wes, he's staying away until he gets one. Here we go again.
He reportedly wants at least $20 million a year, which would make him the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. And for stretches of last season, he was the best receiver in the NFL. I thought Sean Payton had an interesting point when he basically said, because of the collective bargaining agreement they signed in 2011 that got rid of the rookie wage scale, we don't see rookie holdouts. Instead, we see those holdouts happen at the end of their rookie deals.
And because the CBA is ending after this season, it makes negotiations a little trickier in terms of how you can push money out into the future and what the next CBA is going to look like. Like players that are signing 5-6-year deals right now are taking a big risk that by the end of that, they're really going to end up looking underpaid. I think it's the perfect time to have a holdout. This guy, I mean, Michael Thomas might be the most in-shape player in the NFL. Like, if I'm the Saints, do you really care that he misses 3 weeks of training camp? I don't think it'll matter. It sounds like they're not that far apart and that it'll
happen. I don't see this lingering beyond this summertime period. But you do have to – you have Julio Jones still sitting out there. I feel like we're into year 8 of talking about him getting a contract extension at some point. And you've got Tyreek Hill potentially too. So there's going to be – you have to see where those numbers come in when they do.
Julio Jones wants a deal. Amari Cooper, A.J. Green. Beckham, by the way, your boy Odell Beckham, Mark, currently the highest paid receiver. He makes $18 million a season. And Thomas wants more. By the way, we've been tracking this Ezekiel Elliott holdout situation. And, we have a lot of reporters here at NFL Network, and this is money time for the network. This is where they flex and they show we have feet on the ground everywhere and we're covering every breath and every movement in training camp. Yesterday was a great example where Jane Slater goes viral in the news industry by reporting that Zeke was not on the team on the plane to Oxnard for training camp, and sure enough, he did not attend his physical or the team's conditioning run Friday at Cowboys training camp, which opens. He is indeed holding out. There was talk, Mark, that if talks between the Cowboys and Zeke were moving in a positive direction, even if a deal didn't get done, he was going to potentially show up. I don't know if this means that things are not going well, but there's no deal in place, and Zeke is staying away for now.
These are one of these stories. I get that we all eyes on this, and it's the perfect storm of the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott,
exactly.
And we're looking for all this to magnify it. But wake me up in a month, because I feel like the only holdout that truly concerns me, if I'm a fan right now, would be Melvin Gordon. The rest of them, am I wrong? Should I be losing sleep at night over the idea that the Cowboys are going to let Zeke Elliott go weeks into the regular season unsigned or a holdout?
Your feeling is everyone gets signed by that first week of the season.
It's going to get
except
done.
Except for Melvin Gordon.
That's how I would feel. If Chargers fans could be
I'd be really surprised if they sign Ezekiel Elliott. I think he's just going to have to cave because I think Dak Prescott gets paid first.
But do you think he's going to hold out game, regular season games? That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know if they can figure out some other way to get him into camp or if he's just happy to skip a couple weeks of camp, which isn't surprising. I'd be just a little bit concerned with Zeke. Because he's shown up to camp relatively out of shape multiple times.
Right. And he's been very durable, but if he does show up out of shape and he steps on the field week one, maybe a hamstring monster comes get him, I'd be a little nervous as a Dallas fan. And Melvin Gordon, I have to say, I don't know who his agent is or what's going on behind the scenes, but I kind of worry for this guy a little bit because he seems to be going to – and there's another report out there that he's willing to hold out into the season, a Chargers team that has pieces there that you could easily see them getting out to a good start and the running game not being a problem for them. And then he's kind of left in a bad way. He seems to be vulnerable right now.
I agree.
I don't know if he knows
and
that.
And if I was Trent Williams is the other one because, he's a left tackle and Ereck Flowers right now is your left tackle. I know no one expects the Redskins to be any good, but when you're replacing the best player on your team with Ereck Flowers – that's a concern.
That feels like when you have the rare situation where you have a friend who was in a long-term relationship with someone, they broke up, but they're still, because they're in a lease, they're living together after they've broken up. The Redskins and Trent Williams. That's how I see that.
Do you think the hamstring monster is made out of solely hamstrings? Or is it like a beating heart with hamstrings around it, or what?
That sounds pretty scary. It sounds like the next Marvel
I think it's
universe.
More like a gnome that pops out of the dirt and it just slaps you in the hamstring and then goes back underground. No one sees it, but it pops you. It just poop.
I like that. Yeah, like a whack-a-mole.
Bad news for the New York Giants. Of course, they are looking to move on from the OBJ era, and Sterling Shepard is a big part of that. He just got a four-year, $41 million contract extension in April, but he will be shut down for the time being after being diagnosed with a thumb fracture. It happened on Thursday at practice. He'll be evaluated on a week-to-week basis. We talked about Julian Edelman up in New England, also dealing with what I believe is a fractured
thumb.
But that happened, obviously, before this. They're okay with the Patriots with the idea that he'll be back ready for week one. We'll see with Shepard based on the timing of this. And Mike Garofolo reported that this has the potential to go right up against the start of the season. So he could miss week one against the Cowboys 6 weeks from Sunday. And the news didn't get any better on the same day that Shepard got hurt. Corey Coleman, the former Browns first-round pick, trying to get his career on track and in line for a big role with the Giants. He tore his ACL. Try to speak to the football gods last week to show mercy.
You did try.
They didn't listen.
That was largely Jets-based, so I think they've listened so far.
Knock on wood. But I wanted everyone to stay healthy. It's not working out that way. Coleman tore his ACL, and he will obviously be out for the season. That usually involves reconstructive knee surgery. Bad break for Coleman.
And they were saying he had a chance to be the number three receiver. I believe he was actually penciled into that role. Cody Latimer played pretty well at the end of the year, so I don't see a big drop-off there.
No, probably one of those guys was going to get cut. One of them would be a number three receiver. I don't think they're that bad at receiver with Tate, Shepard, and Ingram. If those guys are healthy, and Barkley essentially as a fourth receiver, I know they don't have Odell Beckham, but of all the things on the Giants team, that's not even close to my top concern. If in fact, that might be one of the better position groups.
I mean, Corey Coleman, a total wild card. I don't know. I mean, I the immediate reaction was like, uh-oh, this position group is, you know,
right,
falling apart. It's like Corey Coleman was a let's see if you get anything from him. It's a surprise.
Shepard, it's annoying because he's a guy I've always thought he could put up way bigger numbers than he has, and this is the year to do it. And so it's a rough start for him.
I would say we don't go to the fantasy extravaganza for a few weeks, but maybe a guy that's going to now drop in your drafts potentially, you could get as a bargain. Would they be talking about that on the fantasy corner, Mark?
Oh, Shepard. I thought you were going to make Shepard a joke and say Eli Manning may be available. In the-
I mean, the corner is a rough and tumble, violent environment. So, you know, you're getting words out as quick as you can, and the subject matter is unknown.
Right. I heard some rumors, actually, that gentrification had hit the corner. People were, like, a little upset that there's, like, a lot of, like, there's a lot of places that are, like, barbershop / beard / they serve a drink to you at the same time. Like, it's,
I mean,
know,
it was muggings and shootings before. You prefer that.
There's, like, 14 Starbucks.
Right. It's just, like, a coffee shop. Just a little
if that's the case, it would be a different tone to the reporting.
That's a good tease, though.
If we return there.
We can't say for sure what's going on at the Fantasy Corner. You'll have to wait until about 3 or 4 weeks until the Fantasy Extravaganza returns. Moving, and by the way, the Giants are working out wide receivers, as you might imagine, to
Kelvin Benjamin, reportedly one of them, one of Dave Gettleman's old draft picks.
Oh, that sounds like where he's going to end up. Okay, a report from Tyler Dunn, who works for Bleacher Report these days. He wrote about the 49ers. This one's interesting, Wes. The current scouting staff, according to Dunn, is feeling increasingly marginalized by head coach Kyle Shanahan and his coaching crew, who are, quote, far, far more empowered on draft day. This story comes at a time when the Niners, this is a big pivotal season for them and their leadership. And some of the stuff that came out of this feature makes you think that there's significant unrest behind the scenes.
Well, maybe. I sort of read it as Tyler Dunn got one of these disgruntled guys to talk. And then now it seems like a soap opera when it's really, there are tensions in almost every front office between the scouting staff and the coaching staff come draft time. And the coaches, especially a guy like Kyle Shanahan, who has more power than most coaches because he had a 6-year contract. So there's a lot more job security there, but it's basically the coaches got who they wanted and we didn't get who we want. That happens in every front office.
There was a little nugget. They talked about, for instance, like running back Joe Williams wasn't even on the Niners draft board, and the scouts in the room were ripping him for quitting on his team in college, but Shanahan loved him, and the 49ers got him in the fourth round. The article also is littered with offensive players praising Shanahan to high heaven for how he diagnoses and takes advantage of weaknesses on other teams' defenses.
And the Joe Williams pick has a flip side. Shanahan did the same thing with George Kittle, who turned out to be the leading receiver in history by tight
ends. Mostly a positive article.
It was largely positive.
But at this point, I think Shanahan has more power than most head coaches. And I have said if they had to choose between one of Lynch and Shanahan, if there were problems, I think they would choose Shanahan. This supports that. But the bigger issue with the front office and that staff is they didn't really consider taking Mahomes or Watson. They did not think they needed a quarterback in that draft. They took Solomon Thomas.
They already had Jimmy G.
No, they didn't have anyone. They drafted C.J. Beathard instead, took Solomon Thomas, number 3 overall. And, you know, it's easy to go back and play hindsight. But
I mean, that helped get Sashi Brown fired, too, on those guys.
That was the Trubisky trade, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Moving on in the news. And by the way, program reminder, coming up next, Rosenthal remembers an emotional return to the Raven's Nest. Only on the Around the NFL podcast.
Did you brief Greg that this was going to be turned into such a high-octane thing, or see?
I was like, I've never been to Baltimore before, but we have been to the Raven's Nest many times.
Steelers have signed Coach Mike Tomlin to a contract extension. Not as beefy as what Sean McVay got, though. This is a 1-year extension. The number will keep him employed with the team or under team control through the 2021 season. Tomlin, of course, now 47 years old, hired in 2007 and had a Super Bowl win in that first year. And it's interesting, 10 seasons since, they've always been competitive. They've had great teams. They've had good teams, never a bad team. Last year fell out of the playoff picture, and there was some unrest, obviously, behind the scenes. Two of the superstars of the team, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, both at odds with the organization and now play elsewhere. How much heat do you put on the head coach for that? Apparently the Steelers still have enough faith in Tomlin to give him this vote of confidence and keep him from being a lame duck, Greg. But not
true.
An overwhelming show
yeah,
of faith.
Yeah, it's like sort of like the – like, only the Bengals allow a coach to go into their final year of his contract, essentially. Like, shout out to Mac Brown and Marvin Lewis last year. But, like, so you almost have to do this. It's like the cautious. Okay, let's see.
Well, like the duck that has, like, a wing that's a little wonky. It's not a lame duck, but it's like, caw-caw, caw-caw.
A
not
winged
feeling
duck.
Great.
Okay. Well, the Steelers have never fired a coach in the Super Bowl era. And Tomlin has the highest winning percentage in franchise history.
12 years without a losing record is no joke.
But
it's pretty amazing.
I'd say also it's like, yeah, who are you going to get that's better? Number
right.
one, you have to identify that. But he is, I think he's at a, in terms of his legacy, at an interesting place in his career. Because when I think of the Steelers, and I think when a lot of Steelers fans think of that team, it's the team issues that have happened. You've lost star players, and you continually drop the ball in the playoffs. You have to change that narrative. That Super Bowl feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree. You could look back in 5 years and say that was the point at which he got it back on track, or you could say, oh, that's when the wheels came off. So this is kind of just go on. Never mind. This is a very – Mark's right. It's an important year
for
him.
As he always is. Moving on.
Wes and I are on the same page as always. That's what's
going on. As always. Love it. Kissing cousins. Moving on. Russell Okung, scary story. The Chargers don't have their starting left tackle. A serious health issue. It was revealed Russell Okung put out a – statement on social media that he suffered a pulmonary embolism due to blood clots last month. Didn't we just talk about, Mark, blood clots?
Clint Bowling retired yes. because of this.
Okung suffered the health scare on June 1st and missed mandatory minicamp practices. He was placed on the NFI list this week ahead of opening camp. There's no timetable for Okung. This is a pretty big deal from a team standpoint, left tackle, obviously. Here's what Okung said. While near-death type experiences are certainly a wake-up call, I'm feeling great physically. It's not an ankle or shoulder. As soon as doctors clear me, my plans include blocking number 17's blindside, that's Phillip Rivers, all the way to Miami, where the Super Bowl will be played in February.
I've had two issues with blood clots, and they woke me up about the whole thing. And the first one was my leg was massively swollen, and I could barely walk. And Adam Rank down in our newsroom was like, why are you here? Go to the emergency room. And that time I got it treated quickly and it was fine. And they said it will never come back. The second time was last September when we came back from London, because flights often, if he's flying long distance, this is a concern for him. You have to be on blood thinners. The second time I had this pulmonary embolism thing and it was blackout pain. It was the most painful thing I've ever experienced, and you can barely breathe. And doctors were like, because it sneaks up on you, you could have died. It's very much a life or death thing. And I'm concerned a little bit, same with had Clint Bowling stuck around. If you're on blood thinners and if you get these linemen are constantly dealing with blood loss and cuts that we don't even know about, you can't stay in a game. I mean, you have to go to the emergency room right away, typically.
This is a Super Bowl contender that crumbled down the stretch last year in large part because of their offensive line, the right side of their offensive line in particular, and surprised me that they did nothing to upgrade that line in the offseason, and now you've got your left tackle a bit of a question mark.
Moving on, the Tennessee Titans did some business. They agreed to terms with safety Kevin Byard on a 5-year, $70.5 million extension with $31 million in guarantees. Rap Sheet reported this. The team that announced it, that had reached a multi-year deal with Byard, who it makes him the highest paid safety in the league in average annual value, over $14 million, passing Landon Collins of Washington and the Honey Badger in Kansas City. So a guy entering his age 26 season. Greg, you are fairly high on Tennessee as well, I believe. Maybe not as high as Wes, but you believe that this team can contend and keep a big piece around.
And Byard's kind of like the perfect Titan. He's the guy, it's like if anyone makes a list of like the best safeties and they forget to mention Byard, fans are just like, have you ever heard of a guy named Kevin Byard? Really?
Well, unless you're Deion Sanders.
Right,
heard
yeah, someone's
it.
Not heard
right.
of
really
him.
Really shows you're not paying attention. It's kind of true, though, because he's like the highest paid player at his position, and how many people in America know much about Kevin Byard.
You know what?
Shout out to Kevin Byard, who's had a great, you know, start to his career.
Well, he's one of the few star defensive backs that doesn't make the headlines weekly by shouting at everyone nonstop and getting into fake feuds with people.
I thought their secondary would
truck, you know, things like that.
I thought they'd be much better last year. On paper, they look really good in the secondary. That should be the strength of their team, kind of like the Patriots being able to like match up with anyone. But Malcolm Butler was a huge disappointment, and they really weren't a good secondary, and that's where they need to get better.
Dion, by the way, and Will Brinson over at CBS, our buddy, pointed it out on Twitter. It went from, over the course of one calendar year, it went from Dion thinking that Kevin Byard was a fan on Twitter to Kevin Byard being the highest paid safety in the National Football League. Look good, play good, play good, feel good, feel good, play good, play good, feel good. That's pretty funny.
Life moves pretty fast.
The good thing is if you're Deion Sanders, you kind of could just sweep it all aside and say, don't care.
Did he even respond to it, Deion?
I don't know.
See, nobody even knows. That's what you need to get to Teflon Deion status.
I believe he did, actually. I think he on his show. I think it came up on
did
his
he
show.
Did he ate the poop?
I think he did, yeah. I mean, he wasn't on his high horse about it, from what I recall.
Hey, young buck, this one's on me. Something like that? Are you like a mea culpa?
I don't know if those were the words.
It's an unfortunate phrase, eat the poop. I don't
this
think
comes
that's
from
a thing.
Evan Silva's Twitter account.
Okay.
Deion's quote to Kevin Byard, you stay being a fan, I'll stay being the man.
Not only did he think he was a fan, he capped it by telling you that he is the man.
The man.
Look good, play good. Hey, young buck, you stay a fan.
I mean, this fan was, you know, verified on Twitter with 31,000 followers. That's
right. And it's like some people might be listening to this and being like, oh, you guys shouldn't like talk about Deion like that. He's a colleague. He's like, no. Deion's a colleague to us, like a guy that works in IT is a colleague with Bill Gates.
Like the president with someone who works like at the lowest levels of the Department of Transportation 14 buildings away.
All right, time for 8 o'clock delight. Every first-round pick is under contract. Nick Bosa got a deal done with the Niners, and my Jets signed number 3 overall pick, Quinnen Williams. As usual, it was over nonsense with guaranteed money in the first year of the deal. They worked it out. So everybody's in camp.
First Bosa to not hold out in family history. 1 for 3.
Must feel good. Allen Hurns, who we talked about on Wednesday, released by the Cowboys, suffered that terrible injury in the playoffs. Not out of work long. Signs a 1-year deal with the Miami Dolphins. I wonder if I don't know if he's going to have a role in Miami, but maybe the Giants would have been a potential better spot for him. I don't know, but he signed the deal already. So
I'm not sure he'd be a lock to make any team.
Moving on. Oh, this is interesting. Speaking of injury news, Andrew Luck held out of team drills as a precaution. He's got a calf injury, and the team cited what happened to Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals, Wes. In the NBA playoffs, where he suffered the calf injury in the second round of the playoffs, they held him out, brought him back, and he popped the Achilles. So they used that as a guy to take it easy with their star.
Time of the year to be overly cautious so you can get away with it. And Tom Pelissero reported just minutes ago that he was back on the field doing 7-on-7 work today.
Speaking of 7-on-7 work, Emmanuel Sanders back to work. The Broncos receiver participated in the drills on Wednesday, the first team drills he's done since tearing his Achilles last December. Greg Rosenthal.
They need him. They don't have much.
I'm concerned about their wide receivers a little.
Tell me more, Mark.
32 coming off a torn Achilles.
They almost made my thinnest position groups list. A lot of question marks with that wide receiver core.
The Patriots have question marks on their wide receiver core. Danny Etling has moved to wide receiver, a 7th-round pick in 2018. He was on the practice squad last year. Former quarterback, turn wide receiver. You're excited, Greg.
I am, and a missed opportunity here by the Roto-World writer who mentions Terrell Pryor and someone else's recent quarterback. Hey, former quarterback with the Patriots turning into wide receiver, little white guy. Ever heard of Julian Edelman?
Lock it up.
Yeah, well, the thing is with this guy, though.
6'3", 220.
Right, he is a totally different body. Everyone's saying, oh, it's the next Julian Edelman. Well,
I'm kidding.
Interesting development in Miami Dolphins training camp where Kalen Ballage was the starting running back in team drills
at Friday's practice. This is a trend this week. New coach Brian Flores getting tricky.
I loved his game against the Vikings last year.
I wish you could expand on that, but that's okay. It. You ran out of time.
Go watch his game against the Vikings.
No, you want to finish your thought?
No, I think if Brian Flores is going to run his offense like the Patriots, you're going to have four or five of them. You're never going to be one. There's not one primary starter. They're all going to play.
Hank was talking Ballage up last year.
He's a big guy.
Handsome they're both going
to be. I like Kenyon Drake, but maybe he's never going to be. That's going to be like a 300 come on. Touch guy.
Even though we lost our championship game on Wednesday night, the Shield reflection ceremony celebration will be held at the old Zeusers backyard. Everyone here is invited, obviously, including Handsome Hank, who has no ties really to the Shield, but he's a friend of ours.
Financier, though.
Yes, he's a financier, but he's in England right now with his family. So
this party, one question. Would you deem it safe for young children to be at?
During daylight hours.
Yeah. Earlier on, yes.
I have some concerns, like just sort of knowing.
I mean, Brassy's at the party.
Brassy's going to be there.
Brassy's, like, not a primary
Gonzo
concern.
And Colleen. You know, some of these people, Greg Rosenthal,
who's
some of these people get loose.
Who's more of a concern than Brassy?
I think any one of these people after dark would be a concern.
I mean, your children will be there, so it has to
no,
be
No, they're going
to
be locked. They're going to be locked in the room for 9 hours.
No, you can't.
I'm just going to, like, slide, like,
right? Or maybe they're not going to be there, and I'm wrong, but I would assume.
No, my children will be there, but we're going to get a babysitter to help out.
That's a veteran move.
Yeah. By the way, outside, two developments pulling into the NFL media compound today. One, the mural that we've talked about from time to time on the show featuring a host of all pros in the NFL after about a two-year run is now being taken down.
Here you go.
Rob Gronkowski is on the mural with the Patriots. I hope it wasn't because of that because he'll be back in a couple of months. Mm-hmm. But also Antonio Brown with the Steelers, obviously no longer there. No longer relevant time-wise, so that's been stripped. Also, Greg, you saw the same icon walking in. I believe he had just exited a Mercedes coupe, walking with a management member, the great Al Michaels.
Oh yeah, I want to see what he's doing. What he's maybe he's taping some NFL 100 stuff because
that's what I would guess.
I've noticed there's a lot of celebs plan to come through these doors or have been coming. I think they're taping some top secret NFL.
Got a few of them coming on our show potentially.
Hopefully. And, you know, you work in the NFL as we've been lucky enough to do for several years now. You see a lot of stars up close and personal in the sports world, and it loses a little bit of its luster over time. You don't get the same type of feeling. Al, I feel like, is an uncle that I've never met and have always admired. So he still kind of has the juice when you see him. It's like, oh, that's Al Michaels.
Yeah.
The NFL 100 thing, it's interesting. We had Keith Crossrow, I think is his name, from NFL Films at our talent summit. He made it clear they're not looking to meet standards for this thing. They are trying to set standards for sports lists. And what goes into sports lists?
I mean, when you have a show that's hosted by Bill Belichick, Rich Eisen, and Collinsworth, what a trio.
Do you think Belichick gets paid for that?
Oh, yes.
That's a good question.
He loves football so much that you don't know.
Whatever it is, it's probably below what he's worth. Like, it's probably below what he's worth. But yes, because, I mean, I think if you're why wouldn't you be paid for that? It would be kind of insane not to be.
How insulting to suggest that he do it for free.
Right, that you have to fly out and provide what I'm sure
the company is not hurting for money.
He did a whole day's worth of show. You know, it's like six shows or something like that.
You're almost certainly right, by the way, Mark, but the way you said it was such confidence, like, oh, he likes money.
Well, he does. I mean, I think he's probably been the highest paid coach for a long, long time.
To clarify something for the listeners.
I mean, he should be. He likes money.
Nor do I argue that he shouldn't be. Well, I think he doesn't talk about it much, but I'm sure he likes
money. I'm excited about that because when he's done
money.
When he's done some media stuff, it's been good.
Lips on the sideline. I need more money.
This is not the top 100 players of 2019. We're talking about the top 100 players
next level
of
here.
All time.
All time. All time. Very exciting. Also very exciting. It's time. Rosenthal remembers a return to the Raven's Nest. Only on the Around the NFL podcast. All right, Greg, let's get to it. They put you on a plane.
We got
to
make this expense report worth it. I know what.
They put you on a plane. They sent you to Ravens camp. Did you do What did you do there? Tell us about the whole journey.
Did some ITC. Did you know? It's a very quiet town, Owings Mills. I like that. I like seeing like a different little part of the world. You know, shout out to the Peruvian chicken place in Owings Mills. Big fan. But my, I don't know. My takeaway. Should we just like go through it?
Let's hear it. Tell us all about your trip because the Ravens, to me, and I think we're all on the same page with this. And Mark, you see them as a threat to the Browns' potential rise to the top of the AFC North. This is an interesting team.
Maybe.
This is a team that can do things.
I agree. I think they're more interesting than any Ravens team I can remember, basically since they drafted Joe Flacco. Because it's not just that, they're going to be the most unique offense in the league to prepare for and the toughest, but they have more turnover on defense than they've had since they won the Super Bowl in 2000. So it's a huge turnover on both sides. And the thing that strikes me between what Mark Ingram said and watching them and talking is just the variety on offense of running plays. And I know they did a great job with that last year, but I think they believe that with a full offseason, they did it all on the fly. And Roman wasn't even the coordinator last year. He was just kind of doing the running game. With him able to install an entire offense around Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards and that offensive line, that the Ingram was saying the amount of running plays is just outrageous. The way they can get to different running plays with a billion different formations. And watching practice, you could see it. You'd never saw the same formation two times in a row. There's so many different combinations. They're going to have 2-3 tight ends on the field every snap. And because Lamar Jackson is such a unique running talent and those plays, I just think it's a great combination. And it's just going to be weird and it's going to be different and tough to prepare for.
It was a year ago when, you know, it was questioned whether John Harbaugh would remain as coach if things didn't go well. And the one thing I love about them, and I love any football team that decides this is not working, we're going to switch identities in the middle of the season, and they became a completely different operation. Two questions. Does anything concern you about, I know it's one game, but the Chargers playoff game and how they put the hooks on the Ravens, and what happens to this offense when they get into games where they have to throw the football, when all these varieties of run plays don't work and you're in the deep into the second quarter and you know it's not going to get a lot better?
No, because to me that's one game in which they had about the same amount of yards as the Chargers, two offenses that couldn't do much of anything. A game, by the way, that Lamar Jackson led two long touchdown drives at the end of the game. No one seems to give him any credit for, had the ball with a chance to go win at the end of the game. I'm concerned that he's inconsistent accuracy wise. And then another takeaway watching practice, just like that wide receiver group is so wide open. You have Willie Snead and about 7 or 8 other guys, depending on who you talk to. Different people expect guys to step up. Yeah, it'd be great if Hollywood Brown steps right in. He's never practiced as an NFL player yet. I mean, that's kind of a lot to expect. So you have Jordan Lasley. You know, it's a lot of Seth Roberts taking first team snaps. That's a concern. Yes. Miles Boykin, who's, you know, they're so much faster, had a big long touchdown. They've been talking up Jaleel Scott behind the scenes. It's kind of like one of those guys that they think is going to make an impact. We'll see. But they have so many different guys at wide receiver, and yet you have really no one you can trust other than Snead.
You got a good look at Lamar?
Yeah, I mean, it's one practice. He was pretty erratic. I mean, that's the thing watching him. He can make every throw, but
he doesn't.
But he misses some of the easier ones. I think he's really good in terms of his pocket movement. I think they're going to have him, throwing on the run a lot. But, you know, RG3 was more consistent, it was one day. But it was interesting to see in 2019, players walking off the field the first day of training camp. It was a great scene. The crowd was awesome there. I mean, they were chanting during training camp, at random moments, except for one guy who was like heckling Lamar Jackson. Why would you show up to training camp? He wasn't really heckling, but
I heard
of one guy goes like, "Who you throwing it to, Lamar?" And he like made one other comment. I was like, "What is wrong with you?"
Do they serve alcohol?
No.
That is a
I'm
not surprised there's a guy like that at
training
camp.
It was one guy. It was like 9 in the morning.
Was a throw.
It wasn't a great thing.
I mean, I went to a couple of Jets training camps at Hofstra University in Long Island, and we've been to Rams camp. It is typically a love fest.
People just were there to watch. In terms of like
enjoy.
Clapping and making little chants and stuff, they were the most active training camp crowd I've ever seen. But Lamar was pretty he was frustrated because he was having an up and down day.
Hold there for a word from our sponsor coming up on the broadcast. The next episode with Ricky Hollywood and MVP shadowy league figure and my boss, Sarah Parsons,
wow,
joins Erica. A little teaser, Erica, for the show?
Yeah, it was really, really great. She's the HBIC here at NFL Network. So
I can't say even what that means. I know what you're saying, but I feel like that could get me in hot water with the HR department.
No, she's the head broad in charge.
Oh, okay. That's,
there you go. Well, scale of 1 to 10, how funny? What sort of humor
doesn't a woman
is she
run NFL Network, though? So, you know, technically, I think you'd have to.
Right.
She's the HBIC of the old Zeuser.
Oh, for sure. For
no
sure.
Doubt about
no
that.
No offense.
Yeah. She also said that her favorite broadcast episode was Chris and Lakeisha.
Really?
And the, all of you guys have been on it, so I don't know what that means, but...
It means I'm changing departments.
Hard pass.
Again. All right. There you go. Check it out, the broadcast every week. And now, back to Rosenthal Remembers. An emotional return to the Raven's Nest.
It is a beautiful setting. Steve Weichstag, it's got to be one of the nicest just training facilities. The building... Everything, the big raven, you know, carved, painted into the grass. Like, there is something about football in July and August that just gets you.
This Greg gets you flying. Ravens romance is already annoying to me.
They're more interested. When a team goes from uninteresting to interesting,
I mean, this is going to, like, until they're finally eliminated, we're going to be dealing with this
weekly.
Because
Greg picks his teams that are his teams, although he already has a team.
The one team I would prefer you to never jump
on. I've always been pretty anti-Raven, actually.
You have been in the past.
Because they're a team that... Well, we got along well during
that period. So the timing is not great with the Browns' rise. Or the timing is f***ing excellent, if you ask me. I love it. It will be fun to watch because the Chargers were your team last year.
I mean,
that you were cheating on the Pats with. Now, clearly, it's the team of Baltimore.
Which is the team that I think as a Patriots fan, has annoyed me the most over the years has been the Ravens for a couple of those performances.
Here's the thing about the concept of an interesting football team. Mm-hmm. It only lasts as long as you win.
Right. It only lasts as long. You know, they start the season with the Cardinals and the Dolphins, which they have to be thanking the scheduling gods for that. Because I think it allows them to kind of ease into the season. People are worried about Lamar. But it's like, yes, he's not as good a passer as or consistent as you would like. He was a 21-year-old starter. And the difference is he's a better runner than any of the running quarterbacks before. So it's like, okay, running quarterbacks haven't worked. Well, they haven't been the same as Lamar Jackson, especially in this NFL.
You're saying he's a better running quarterback than Michael Vick?
I think he's the best one since Michael Vick,
okay,
and maybe better. He was on pace to shatter the rookie rushing record. They had the most successful
eight. That's a volume thing, too.
Yeah, partly.
I mean, I don't think that makes him a better runner than Michael Vick. That's because he was on pace.
The ease that they picked up 70, 80 yards from him. I mean, they had the best, you know, 8-game stretch in 40 years running. He turned Gus Edwards to a top 5 back. Gus Edwards outgained Ezekiel Elliott and Christian McCaffrey after Lamar Jackson took over.
No Gus has ever been a top 8 anything until that.
It's a great landing spot for Mark Ingram.
And Greg Rowe, you know, I'm excited to watch Greg Roman. But part of it that I'm into them too is the defense. Like, right now, Patrick Onwuatsu is the guy taking over for Ray Lewis and CJ Mosley's spot. And he, to me, is like a symbol of the team. I mean, he's calling plays. He never even played linebacker until he was a pros. Now he's, you know, one of the leaders of that group, and it's like a totally remade group that's kind of a mystery.
Do you think they are the favorite to win the North, in your mind?
No. I think the Steelers and the Browns, I would say, are more of a favorite. But I think they're all... It's not much separating those three.
Any other takeaways from your time at Ravens?
My strongest opinion is less about the time there, although he had a great day, Mark Andrews, but more about watching the Lamar Jackson tape. That Mark Andrews, to me, is like an unbelievable making the leap candidate to be a Pro Bowler right now, to gain 800 to 1,000 yards and be a badass blocker, and for him and Hayden Hurst and Nick Boyle to cause a lot of problems. And I think that's kind of the centerpiece of their offense. Even though it's Lamar and the tight ends and Ingram and all the different things you can do with those guys. And Andrews, I guess because he was a late, you know, third-round pick and he was on the Ravens, didn't get a ton of love. But for a rookie tight end to look that good, like, I am expecting him to be a badass.
Well, he's in the right offense because Lamar Jackson throws almost exclusively to his tight ends and rarely throws outside the numbers, or rarely completes passes outside the numbers anyway. Mm.
I do have a hot take on the Baltimore, you know, on the sun in Baltimore.
That's
so
right.
You know, this time of year, it's, you know, it's humid. People a lot of complain. That mid-Atlantic sun, I mean, it doesn't hold a candle to the West Coast sun. Give me 83 on the East Coast, over 73 or even 71 in terms of sun 71? Strength. Wait, on the West Coast,
the sun
it's
is
more
less
intense.
Powerful?
It's less powerful. I think that's science because it's like farther away from the equator. You can stand out in that East Coast sun. It's true. I was in Massachusetts too when it was 90, 92 degrees. You can be out in that sun for a little while. You're out here and it's 72 degrees and that thing's going to burn you.
And you reported that you showed up there and you forgot all your underwear also.
Well, that's true. I had to
I pulled the Cessna there.
Yeah. I had an extra pair of, athletic shorts. So I just used that as my underwear and then, hit the target. This is actually the second road trip this season that I've had
what
to go to
wear?
A target. I hit a target and, bought
some underwear.
What
did you wear for day one?
Day one, I just went with like my running shorts underneath actual shorts.
I shared this nugget before the show, but I feel like the audience would like it to know it as well. There was this guy that I went to high school with named Berger who loved playing basketball and, he just was all about it that every day at school he wore gym shorts under his jeans in case a game broke out.
I've done that before.
Just in case.
Sounds like a man with a vibrant social life.
It's a lot of layers. Last thought connected to the Ravens because she wrote that Making the Leap piece as well, Greg. Let's do a little over-under 2019 Lamar Jackson. Over-under 3,000 passing yards.
Over.
Wes?
Under.
Wes, over-under 14 passing yards.
7.1 yards. He had more yards per attempt than Andrew Luck, by the way, last year, and Matthew Stafford.
Honestly, Wes, where would you
put Lamar Jackson.
Where would you put Lamar Jackson if you had a peg? I know yardage isn't the indicator necessarily of greatness, but I think he's a 2,500-yard passer?
Passing yards? Somewhere in that 2,800 to 3,000-yard range.
14.5 touchdown passes.
I want to clarify. I think he'll probably be injured at some point as much as he runs, too, so that factors into my statistical guess.
All right. 12.5 starts.
Wow.
Over.
Over.
Over on all these.
14.5
touchdowns. These are about his paces from last year.
14.5 touchdowns?
Yeah.
Over.
Go over.
Passing touchdowns.
But you want a second-year quarterback to be better than his previous pace. You
right. No, I'm saying that these are pretty low bars. These are pretty low bars.
900 rushing yards.
Over.
Whoa. Okay. Okay. What do you think, Mark?
Because I'm going to
do. I mean, he had 707 starts.
So you see 4,000 combined yards passing and rushing. You see a guy that has maybe 30 total touchdowns. You see a guy that's basically a young Vic.
Yeah,
that's a playoff.
I think
team.
He's going to be a young star. I mean, he was. That's the thing. I don't know if it was that game or what. I feel like the bar or the like moved for him so much, like change, like moving the field.
The first three quarters of that playoff loss, and I know he picked up his numbers and made it look
he
respectable.
Was, but so was Marshall Yanda. Marshall
I'm
Yanda
saying,
was
that
terrible. The offensive line was terrible. The running game was terrible. They were all terrible.
It's only and one it, game. I
and
agree.
The whole game counts too. Like to me, the fact that he made some badass throws in the fourth quarter like counts for something.
Absolutely.
And he was a rookie, so I'm not.
All these running plays you're talking about, that's fine. But the flip side of that is every defensive coordinator in the league has spent the offseason trying to figure out this defense. It's not going to be as easy as it was.
But it's going to be a totally different offense, I think.
And he's not going to run 20 times a game. Their owner even said that. He's not going to run as much as he did last year.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Greg. That was as emotional as I thought it would be. it feels like it really you didn't grow up in that area, but it was...
No, I felt a connection.
Yeah, I can
wow.
see that.
Think you might move there someday?
Probably not, but I've never been there. And I'll tell you, Residence Inn, there's some strange things going on at the Residence Inn,
I believe that.
Like spirits, like haunted...
Just people that have clearly been living there for like months, it seems, to have their dogs
that's
there.
That's where the connection
they
you're
leave,
describing
They
came
leave
from?
Their dogs. No, but I just, the whole vibe, it was quiet. I liked it. It was different.
If you're a long-term resident at the Residence Inn and the dog's staying home during the day, and I don't know where you're going, I think you went sideways at some point in your life. I'm not saying you're a bad person or your life's bad or whatever. It's just maybe things haven't gone to plan.
They have.
Let's settle down on dogs to begin with, please.
That's a hot take.
I don't agree with that. That's how I feel.
When you put the sign on your door that says "Do not disturb," they have like many different options for those at the Residence Inn, including one that's like "Pooch in the room" or something like that. Pooch like, leave it alone. My dog's in the room.
I know NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
Isn't that bizarre? Yeah.
You were. Uh oh.
Look out, it's NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
Call the sheriff.
Now, you would think at some point that you're staying in a better hotel. Like, if it's, a hotel allows dogs, which is weird, by the way, because, like, all right, you could bring your dog, and then the next person that goes in there, there's dog hair and maybe a peed in the corner.
No, I don't need that, no.
Don't they try to put people with dogs into the rooms that have already had dogs in?
Yeah, I think so. I chose it because it was so close.
What if there's a convention and you got to put everyone in everyone, then you're in a room with all this, like, golden shepherd hair on your pillow and
your Siciliano stay at the Residence Inn with the dogs?
Hey,
like it's a kennel, basically.
I just stayed wanted in a hotel place that you could, my dog before.
Yeah.
I stayed at a kennel so I could be close to the team headquarters.
I just wanted to be like 2 miles away. That was the choice. Get some points, you know?
You travel with a dog. Where are you supposed to stay?
Don't travel with the dog.
That's not the answer.
Because it's not great.
Well,
it's not good
answer.
For a dog to travel either. A dog needs stability. It needs to have. For me, like, I love dogs. No, I love dogs. Like, the reason I don't have a dog is I want a bigger yard to have a dog. I want to be home all the time. I want people home. A dog shouldn't be stuffed underneath an airplane.
Don't listen to Dan.
Carriage.
You can travel with your dog.
You can, but it doesn't mean you should.
What if you're on a road trip driving for 10 hours and you have the dog with you?
That's a one-off thing. That's fine.
Okay.
But if you're continually traveling with a dog, I don't really count like the 8-pound dogs. That's barely a dog to me. But
you mean like don't
dog,
be a traveling salesman with a dog or a truck driver with a dog?
I don't know. Just don't.
Because what most other things would be a one-off.
Give the dog a stable home where it lives most of its life and it's not being put through airport security and things of that nature.
If you're a truck driver, you got to have a basset hound in the front seat.
I mean, I wouldn't, but others might.
Fred, wasn't that all right. Eastbound and Down?
We'll be back next week with 3 more shows, so make sure you join us. And we're in full swing now.
I have a little tiny weekend opener to play for you.
Okay.
It's just a weekend little vibe. Open. We're getting into the weekend.
All right,
stop telling me that the season's here and we can't have fun as human beings anymore. Hmm.
Yes, there it is. That's Homer Simpson's dad. I love it. The Shields remembrance/reflection ceremony, Zeuser Manor on Saturday, and we'll be back Monday, God willing. That's it. Dan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Ricky, you coming?
Oh, yeah, baby.
You promise?
Yes, I will be there.
There will hell to pay. We'll rain fire if you're not there.
Okay.
Till Monday.